What we help to do is take really messy data and scrub it of any personally identifiable information that was in there, so that you can then use it within your organization and not worry about that information leaking or being misused.
Welcome to AI for Business Growth, the podcast from pioneering artificial intelligence entrepreneur, Dr. Andre Bates. This show aims to demystify AI for all business people, from startup entrepreneurs right through to Fortune 500 companies. Each episode focuses on all things AI and future tech to help you and your business to navigate through and benefit from the sometimes confusing but magical world of AI-powered tools to grow businesses.
Today's show is on how we can comply with data and privacy laws while using personal data with artificial intelligence. So artificial intelligence uses personal data to provide a stronger customer experience by making it more relevant and accurate to the customer. And while marketing and business activities are becoming more personalized, consumers and governments are becoming more wary about the use of personalized data. People don't want to do business with companies they can't trust, and governments are looking at how they can put regulations in place to provide limits on what can be done with personal data. Smart businesses today are looking at how they can actually use personalized data to create a great customer experience while being respectful of privacy and basically staying in compliance with all of the regulations that are out there. My guest today is Patricia Thane, who founded Private AI, which provides a way for companies to safely share personalized data with algorithms while safeguarding the customer privacy and trust. Welcome, Patricia. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you so much, Andrea. Such a pleasure to be here.
Can you tell us a little bit about your background and what led you to found Private AI?
Absolutely. So I come from doing research in privacy-preserving natural language and spoken language processing. And back in 2019, was looking at the different applications that could be built on top of email or messages or phone transcripts or any sort of unstructured data. And it was really obvious after talking to a lot of different companies that they were sitting on this huge amount of data that AI was just at the brink of being able to unlock and help them monetize. And there was one thing standing in their way, and this was the risk of that personally identifiable information being exposed or being misused. So decided to create a very generalizable solution for developers to be able to plug in anywhere in their software pipeline so they can detect what kind of personally identifiable information there is in the data that they're dealing with and also remove it and replace it as they need to.
Wow, how interesting. So when we think about some of the rules and regulations that are out there, so in Europe, we've got GDPR, there's the CCPA in California, and this is really just the beginning. You know, neither of these is perfect, and they will evolve as privacy laws expand. While each company has to look at what they have to do with legally obtained data, according to their own corporate ethics, they all have to pay attention to compliance with regulations. Can you explain a little bit about why you think privacy preservation is critical moving forward with AI?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So there are a number of reasons. One very visible reason is when AI memorizes the personally identifiable information and then ends up showing that to other users. So an example of this is ScatterLab, which is this company out of Korea that had been talking about the billions of conversations they had between users. They didn't worry about privacy, and the next thing they knew, their system was spewing out in their chats entire names, entire addresses, other personally identifiable information from the users. So there's this increasing awareness of how much care must be taken about the personally identifiable information that might be found in training data. Mm-hmm. But then there's also the aspect of this AI is going to allow you to find patterns in a way that people have never been able to before in this giant pool of data.
Yeah.
So making sure that that data isn't misused to target individuals inappropriately, to put individuals in harm's way, that is super important, and consent is core to making that happen, and privacy preserving machine learning is core to making that happen.
Mm-hmm. And so with private AI, mm-hmm. what does it do specifically in this domain?
Mm-hmm. So you can imagine, for example, you might want to analyze a transcript for sentiment. How does somebody feel about a product or about a company or a conversation that's happening with a customer service agent? What you don't need within that conversation are their credit card numbers, their social security numbers. Often, you know, even their name is not necessarily relevant. And so removing those both direct identifiers and quasi-identifiers, which can be used to approximately determine who is speaking, and when joined together, these can exponentially increase the risk of re-identification. You still have a lot of really valuable content in that unstructured text where you can determine the topic, the sentiment, the products, whether a customer service agent needs training. So what we help to do is take really messy data and scrub it of any personally identifiable information that was in there so that you can then use it within your organization, even share it with third parties, and not worry about that information leaking or being misused.
Interesting. And it's such an important space. I'm doing a project for a pharmaceutical client at the moment, and we've really been spending the last few weeks talking to the lawyers and the compliance teams, really looking at what we can and cannot do with the personal data that mm-hmm. we've got. So it's just becoming so important that it's not able to be used in a way that could be dangerous for the person involved. Mm-hmm. So with what you're doing, is it text data only or mainly that you do it with? Or you mentioned customer service agents. Is that so text clearly, definitely. Is it available? Could you do it for video, audio, other kinds of data as well?
We also do this for video, audio, PDFs, a number of other document types. And we can also do this for structured data, but our core competencies are around basically any kind of unstructured data. For audio, which is, I guess, one of the hardest modes, it's about identifying where the personally identifiable information is in the audio, bleeping it out. And we can also modify the voice, and we're working on determining what kind of privacy guarantees we can make about those voice modifications so that voice is no longer a biometric identifier and therefore not covered under the GDPR.
Wow, that's amazing. It was making me think about this that Target. I don't know if you know that Target example about a decade ago where what they were doing was they were analyzing the data, and so they could predict if someone was pregnant, for example. And there was that mm-hmm. famous case where the father of a teenage girl got very angry because there was all this information being sent to her about pregnancy, and he thought it was inappropriate, stormed in, and then the manager apologized to him. And then a few days later, he came back and said, "I'm sorry, turns out she is actually pregnant." So it's a really delicate balance. You know, you want to give personalized information that's relevant to the customer, but you don't want to be, you know, letting everyone know what's going on in their lives. So what do you think are the biggest challenges that you're seeing with your clients in this space of that delicate balance between personalization and privacy?
That's a really interesting question. And that's a really tough one to grapple with. Our clients generally are after making generalizations and making models that work for a large group of people, not so much targeting individuals in that way. Mm-hmm. But we do have, for example, a client who works with mental health, and they analyze Slack messages with the user's consent mm-hmm. and then provide feedback about what kind of tools they have available to them or benefits that they could use depending on what kind of situation they're going through. And that is targeted, consensual, and the customer can remove their consent at any point in time. And where they use us is to remove any personally identifiable information before their data reaches their API, And so everything that they're providing information about is not based on anything that can really directly identify the individual. I think it's about having that that safe environment where to provide that targeted inference with mm-hmm. the AI models. And if, for example, that teenager was provided those ads in a safe environment that nobody was able to access other than her, yeah. maybe that could have been a more acceptable use if she had consent. But also, we are dealing with a minor here, so completely yeah. different regulations when it comes to handling their personal information.
Yeah. Now, a lot of large companies try and do this themselves. I'm seeing that a lot. And it's not a simple thing to do. So what kind of challenges would they be likely to run into? And what kind of challenges did you run into that you've now solved?
Mm-hmm. That's a really interesting question. So we often sell at a build versus buy point in time for our customers, or mm-hmm. when they've tried it and then failed.
Yeah.
We do have people who say, oh, we're actually going to try to build it themselves. And then a year later, they come back to us.
Yeah.
And the kind of challenges they'd face is, one, not realizing how much of a haul it is to get the data required in order to train these models. And this is for a number of reasons. You can't find, you know, credit card numbers in the wild in not in a significant amount enough to generalize models. There's a bunch of corner cases, and that's something that needs to be thought of very thoroughly. We have linguists on the team who think about various linguistic turns of phrases. And we also have customers who provide us with corner cases that we've missed that we've using to build up our models over time so that everybody could take advantage of that. And also, I think people don't expect how meticulously you need to annotate data in mm-hmm. order to get to the level of accuracy that's high enough for this to be a viable solution. Yeah. We go through data passes over and over again. Every time we want to add a new entity type, we need to go through the entire data set, and we've managed to make that efficient. And another aspect of it is it can cost quite a bit of money to create models that don't run efficiently in your environment. We spent a lot of time working on making the models extremely efficient so that our customers don't have a giant cloud bill at the end of the month because it is running in their environment.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't have that expertise of speeding up models.
Yeah, I have a lot of that build versus buy discussions with my clients because a lot of pharmaceutical companies like to build. Mm-hmm. And I always disagree with that if there is something that has already been, you know, spent years being developed and is there, and it's the one thing that company does. So they do it really, really well. So, you know, it's really interesting. So mm-hmm. when I think about a platform like yours, it's kind of the best of both worlds. You know, you've solved all the problems. Mm-hmm. You're creating that privacy preservation, but you're also allowing the algorithms to use data to enhance the customer experience. Mm-hmm. What kind of companies do you see coming to you the most?
It varies. It's from a lot of different places. We've got companies in the healthcare space, insurtech, telemedicine, conversational AI, banking, insurance. This is anywhere from pre-seed startups all the way to multi-billion-dollar companies. It's a very general need, it's really about developers needing the flexibility that the solution provides.
Yeah. And is there particular use cases that you see coming out more frequently?
A lot of it based on who we've targeted. Mm-hmm. And that is a lot of dealing with transcripts or chatbots or any sort of conversational data.
Wow. Yes, I suppose most companies would be having that kind of need as well. And I was thinking in pharmaceuticals, another area that would potentially be very helpful is in clinical trial documents because, mm-hmm. you know, redacting, they spend so much time, you know, with people redacting documents just to hide the personally identifiable information. And I'm assuming that your system could do that very efficiently.
Absolutely. We could. Yeah. It's a really interesting use case.
Yeah, that would be a huge saving for so many pharma companies to have that. What do you see as the biggest area of concern with respect to privacy in the clients that come to you?
The biggest concern. I think a lot of them want to make sure that they're doing right by their clients, not only by the legal obligation that they have.
Mm-hmm.
I think there is a concern over what if there is a data breach?
Yes.
Is this the maximum amount of protection that we could provide for the data and also gain that utility? And in some cases, it is, we have this contractual obligation to remove the person and find more information, and we don't want to take away resources from our core product. What's the best?
Okay, interesting. Do you think that reverse engineering is a challenge for some of the AI ML models in this respect for privacy?
Do you mean reverse engineering of our models or reverse engineering of
other? No, not other models in general. So if someone had created a model, mm-hmm. They weren't using your system, mm-hmm. could someone reverse engineer to get the data?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And there has been some more research recently about what that looks like. Mm-hmm. But you can, for example, measure the surprise of a model, a language model in particular, when it comes to seeing a particular string of data.
Yeah.
And if it's not surprised, or it's surprised very little, it's a very good indicator that that data was likely in the training set. And so that's one way of reverse engineering what the training data contained.
And what about federated learning? Does that solve this enough?
So federated learning, not on its own. It does in combination with either differential privacy or with de-identification, because it's still memorizing the data, even if you're spreading that model across multiple systems.
Yeah, interesting. And so with your clients, what would you say was the biggest challenge they faced before they used your platform? And how did your platform solve those challenges?
Some of them couldn't access the data that their customers wanted to share with them.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them were concerned that their internal solutions were not good enough. Some of them were not able to share information internally because their data protection officers or their CISOs were telling them they couldn't because of the person identifiable information.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them, for example, when they want to scan a data lake to see what kind of PII is in there, their data loss prevention providers often require them to tell them in advance what kind of PII they expect to find. And that means that they can't use that system for creating a report at the end of what kind of personally identifiable information they found. Okay. And that's something that they can use us for.
Interesting. Could you give maybe, so that you mentioned insurtech, healthcare, et cetera. So you've got so many different industries. Maybe could you give one example from insurtech, for example, how they've used your system?
Mm-hmm. For insurtech, that is for in gathering information about questions that people mm-hmm. have answered and making sure that none of those questions contain person identifiable information.
Okay.
So they can create models around those answers without risking the individual privacy.
Okay. And what about for healthcare? How have you used it in healthcare?
In healthcare, chatbot is one. Mm-hmm. Looking at electronic medical records, de-identification with a pilot, and also telemedicine is another one. So also being able to analyze the conversations without worrying about the PII.
I'm really interested in the patient record one because that's clearly an area that's of interest to me in what we do. Could you tell me a bit more about that kind of use case that you... So you had the patient record data and your platform was able to strip out the PII from that.
Right. That's right. So you have the patient record, you could strip out the PII. And then once you have the patient record that is de-identified, it's more acceptable to share it, to be able within the organization itself, even share it with the machine learning group to see what kind of tools can be developed to help the patients.
Yeah. Wow, that's really interesting. Where have you done that? What countries?
United States mainly is where we're looking at.
Okay, interesting. Mm-hmm. Now, AI needs data, obviously. What do you use as your training data sets when you were developing this?
What did we use on our training data sets?
So
a lot of data we sourced ourselves. Some of it we've created synthetically. Some of it we source from our customers. And that's both from them sharing an initial data set, if they're comfortable, and then afterwards also sharing corner case examples of where we may have missed PII.
Interesting. And I'm thinking about, one of my friends is an architect, and she designs these homes that have mirrors in the bathroom that scan your face and body and can predict subtle changes that can be indicative of like a stroke coming on or whatever. And they actually also have toilets that do urine and feces analyses each day. Mm-hmm. So it's very much about diagnostics, which is quite interesting. But I was thinking about that and thinking this whole space of IoT is very interesting for privacy, you know, with even within our phones, you know, all of the health data in there as well. Is there a way to incorporate your privacy platform into some of these kind of analyses? So, for example, the mirror analyses, how instant could your platform remove the data? I mean, probably not instantly, but I'm just wondering how that would be able to be incorporated in those kind of situations.
Mm-hmm. Ours does work in real time, but it's more about removing the PII entirely rather than maintaining certain features and blurring out others. I think the right privacy solution there would be to do the inference on the edge, ideally. So directly in an IoT device that's in your mirror or in the toilet.
That's interesting. So you could potentially, in the future, develop a version of your platform that people could actually incorporate, you know, license and incorporate into their IoT systems, potentially.
Down the line, yes.
Down the line. So with what you've got right now, I mean, I know I can see lots of areas that you can expand into. Mm-hmm. How long is the process to incorporate privacy into a data set, for example, when they use your platform? I guess it depends on data set, but
it depends on the pipes that they have going at the moment. It can take anywhere from 15 minutes to a couple of weeks. And if, in some cases, when they're creating an entirely new product with us incorporated, it depends how long it takes to finish creating that product.
Yeah.
So in that case, it would be a matter of a few months. But generally, if you already have an internal solution and you just want to change the pipes, it might take less than a week.
Wow, that's very cool. Mm-hmm. How old is your company? I forgot to ask. When did you actually start?
2019.
Okay, so quite young. What are your plans? Where do you see, you know, your solution going in the next few years?
Mm-hmm. So we want to be the privacy layer for everything. For developers to be able to plug and play anywhere they want, either in iPhone, in Android, in browser, on-prem, in their private cloud, just anywhere they want in their pipeline, and be able to provide them with as many insights as possible about the kind of risks they're taking, the kind of risks that they've diminished, and provide them with what they need to show regulators that they're doing the right thing.
What is your pricing model? Do you have a subscription, or is it a fee for service and subscription, or what? How does it work?
We have a tiered pricing model. So we have a first tier, starter tier that includes one language, and then we have the next tier that includes up to 100 million words per month and multiple languages, and then we have a third tier that's unlimited use, and that's a that's more for enterprise use.
Languages, I didn't think of that. How many languages can you handle?
We can handle 33, and that is growing quarter over quarter.
Interesting. Do you have Japanese in there?
Coming soon. Yeah, coming this summer.
Interesting. What about Chinese?
Also coming this summer.
Nice. Just because in my industry, Japan and China are becoming big markets. So
interesting.
Yeah.
Cool.
Wow. Well, I think I love what you're doing because I just think this is such a big space that needs something. And when I came across your company, I thought, wow, this is what everyone needs. You know, it just allows the power of the AI without, you know, compromising the privacy and everything else that's required. So thank you so much for sharing what you're doing with the audience of this podcast. For anyone who wants more information on private AI, go to private-ai.com and you will be able to find out more there and maybe even talk to Patricia.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for being on the show today. I really appreciate it.
It was a real pleasure. Thank you for the great questions.
You're welcome.
Thanks for listening to this episode of AI for Business Growth with Dr. Andre Bates. If you have received huge value from this show, or maybe this episode has highlighted how you can use AI in your business, then we would love for you to support the show by leaving us a 5-star rating wherever you download your podcasts. For more information on the subjects covered in this episode, links mentioned during the conversation, or to connect with Dr. Andre, click the link in the show notes now. Plus, make sure you hit the subscribe or follow button on your podcast app now to make sure you never miss an episode.